Remember the cousin I went to high school with?
Are you talking about the insane man who tried to marry a rooster to protest gay marriage?
Yeah, that one. Anyway, he married that girl a few years back. Remember? We went to the wedding.
How could I forget? The groomsman wore camo and the bride had to have her parents sign the marriage certificate.
Yeah, it was creepy.
Babe, a carnival is creepy. Marrying the neighbor's 17-year-old daughter at 37 years old is just fucked up.
Well, she invited me to a Zoom conference a few weeks ago for this new business she's involved in, and it starts in a few minutes.
Is this some MLM shit like the last thing she was involved in? Do you remember the company that only made clothing for men with skinny arms? It's the new trend. We're gonna be millionaires. They are nearly broke because of these get-rich-quick schemes.
I know. I just feel so bad. She only had two people say yes, and I promised her I would attend.
Well, shit. Please don't buy anything.
Jack, do you think I was born on a turnip truck? I never buy any of this shit. I just smile and tell her I'll think about it.
She is not exactly what I call a salesperson. I mean, honey, that voice.
Okay, now she can't help that. That's because of a skiing accident.
No. She was being pulled by a semi-truck while she was on skis over a state highway. Just because there were skis involved does not mean she was skiing.
You get my point.
Yeah, but again, that voice.
It's disturbing, I agree, but she can't help it, so...
What is she selling anyway?
I don't know, she won't say. It's part of the quote-unquote mystery. That's how they get people to show up. The name of the company is something like Butterbark.
Okay, listen, I'll watch the kids, but don't buy anything.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for attending my very first meeting for Butterbark Incorporated. I'm very excited y'all are here because you're the first people in my downline. I'm excited to tell you that in my downline, I'm number 346. So I'm only 300 additional downlines from making the pink petals line. That's where we get an invitation to next year's cruise, Sailing for Selling. When you make that downline, that's when the cruise price drops 3.5%. And you get a box of pink koozies with your website address to pass out at parties. I am so excited, y'all. So I bet you're super curious to dig right in and learn more about Butterbar.
Sure, Sally. So glad to be here.
I am so honored to be a part of this group. It's been like a year since I was invited anywhere, so I'm just glad to be calling someone besides Little Caesar's Pizza.
You're too sweet, Francis. I'm so sad to hear about your pet raccoon. Such a tragedy.
I had no idea he was in the dishwasher, poor little guy. He was just so curious. He couldn't help himself. And once the super hot clean cycle started, there was nothing anyone could do. He got a mouthful of Dawn liquid pack and got swept right into the silverware basket. I was mortified.
Too tragic. So without further ado, I'd like to roll out my new product line, Butterbark. It is an essential, organic, tree bark butterscotch oil that is curing illnesses, shedding pounds, and fixing broken marriages across the world. This is the same company who brought you Circle Knife, the knife that cuts in circles. Unfortunately, due to some irresponsible customers, that company has closed its doors. But Butterbark is a company for the times. I just tell you how amazing this product is. I have been using it for 4 months and I already notice a difference. I've lost 3 pounds, my love life has never been steamier, and coronavirus doesn't scare me one bit. That's because Butterbark makes COVID go into hiding.
That's incredible. That's just incredible.
Did you say in hiding?
Yes, I did, because I can't legally say it cures coronavirus because, you know, Obama and stuff. But it literally makes COVID hide in your blood until a later date, which, let's face it, a cure is coming over the summer, so I'm excited about this product. Do you want to hear the details of how we make money off this? I know that's why you've come to this call.
I literally just shit myself with excitement. I am in. I'll take 40.
Is this legal?
Perfectly legal. The company founders have made a deal with indigenous Amazonians to harvest the bark. They go deep into the rainforest and retrieve the bark from the elusive butterscotch tree. Then they use a patented process to extract the oils. The process has been handed down from generations of Amazonian forest doctors. Technically, they're not doctors. They are doctores. I have to say that for legal reasons. But this is not the most exciting part. We are going to talk about money. And let me tell you, there is so much money to go around in this brand new opportunity. I am already making $3,000 a week on paper.
I want in. Where do I sign? Also, will there be opportunities to make other friends? Will I be invited to calls like this? I feel like I'm a bit misunderstood, and if people just gave me a chance, I could really bring value to their lives.
Of course. You can have all the friends you ever need. We're like a family here at Butterbark.
How much money do you make a week, Sally?
$3,000 gross.
How much of that is profit? I mean, how much do you take for yourself?
I pay the company $600.
Is that a month?
A week.
Oh, Sally, what have you gotten yourself into again?
No, it's not like the other ones. This one's really gonna work. I'm in a downline where we just cannot lose.
How long, Sally? How long have you been doing this?
Oh, not that long. Just about 62 weeks.
Oh my God, Sally. How much Butterbark have you purchased?
Well, currently I have about 2 rooms full of it.
Shit. Sally, you don't even have 2 bedrooms in the trailer.
I know, me and the kids are sleeping in the car right now, but I believe in this. It's gonna work, you just have to make some sacrifices. I just need to find a few more people in my downline, and then I really start making the good money.
And exactly how many people do you need in your downline to start making money?
Well, I get a $1 bonus for every person I bring in, up to 30 people, and then I start getting $10 a person. So I'm about 28 and a half people away from that $1 bonus.
How is it possible to have half a person?
We signed up Jingles the dog. Don't tell anybody, it's against company policy. And additionally, Jingles was hit by a car and is no longer with us.
Sally, I'm sorry. I don't think I can be a part of this. This is exactly like the last 5 opportunities we discussed. We can't afford to be losing that kind of money.
Please, Jane, I'll pay for your first 2 months. I just need to show that I'm making some progress. Please?
Question, do you still have your annual Christmas party?
Who, me? Yes, why?
Okay, I'll buy all of it.
All of what?
The Butterbark. I'll buy all of it. I just want an invitation to the Christmas party.
Done.
Ellie, you realize she's in love with your cousin Todd, right?
You mean the one on parole?
He is like a piece of cake. Can I get an introduction?
Francis, you realize he set a KFC on fire for not having waffle fries. You do know that.
Don't care. Need human touch. Do we have a deal?
Deal.
Sally, I meant to mention, Jack and I won't be in town this Christmas. We're going to his parents' house.
Oh, I thought they were dead.
They are, but we're going to be close to their ashes, and that's good enough for Jack.
Listen, you're really going to miss out. I have a Santa costume, and chaps are on the bottom part. That's all I got to say. That's all I want to say.
Bye, ladies. Gotta run.
Okay, bye, Jane.
Okay, Jane. Have a nice night.
In early 2020, the world shut down. Stores, restaurants, schools, and whole communities shut their doors in an effort to protect human life. As the world quickly changed, one man went on Facebook to get a degree in internet epidemiology. Brian, along with his lab assistant Hoadley, are curing coronavirus by commenting on fake news and reposting recipes of secret virus cures from a friend of a friend who works high up in government. Join Brian and Hoadley as they discuss the world and life during this forced interruption, learning, laughing, and loving in this real-life commercial break. On this episode of The Commercial Break.
So I self-taught myself to play the piano, but that did not end up me being the world's best shredding guitarist. Yeah, instantaneously, I'm like, if you ever need any help, let me know. I want to go to live shows for free. Let me know. With Michael McDonald?
I thought she'd better, longer.
I wanted to take a minute to let you know we recorded this particular episode weeks ago, long before George Floyd was murdered in broad daylight by a Minneapolis police officer. I also want you to know that The Commercial Break as a show, Hoadley, me, everyone else that works to put this program together, stand together with the protesters who are standing up against injustice, police brutality, racism, and indifference, which may be the worst of all. We want you to know that we will not use our platform to propagate that prejudice, and we don't support those who do. We want you to be safe, we want you to take care of each other, and we want you to be unified. Know you have our support, and I'm putting out this episode in hopes that you get a laugh out of it. Peace and love, enjoy this episode of The Commercial Break.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
So you saw Prince's last live show.
I did. It was at the Fox, Fox Theater here in Atlanta.
Okay.
Amazing.
Which must have been, obviously no one had any idea that Prince was ill or sick, because he wasn't ill or sick. He just kind of keeled over after an overdose of fentanyl, which is the way some of these other artists have gone too. Tom Petty died that way too, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
People are in pain, and I think they've got people around them that just aren't.
Bunch of yes men.
And they're like, take this, and it does feel good, makes them feel better, makes the artist feel better, and then, you know, they're addicted, and then there's an overdose situation.
I think, too, is that, you know, money and time are an addict's worst enemy, and when you're rich, everyone tells you that that's okay. You've probably got a doctor that's prescribing it to you at will.
Yep.
And no doubt that Prince is walking around in those high heels for, you know, 22 years. He's probably got some back problems. But he was an amazing artist. Probably, in my opinion, one of the greatest that ever lived.
Absolutely.
And I think his influence on all genres of music is, in some cases, way underrated. I think people think of him as like a singer, because they know his limited catalog that's released in videos or that's played on the radio. But I believe he was one of the best guitar players that ever lived also.
Yes.
Without any doubt. If all you have to do is watch some of the live footage, and there's not a ton of it out there, but you watch some of the live footage on YouTube, and you can see that he's like, that guy can fucking shred. He's amazeballs.
Oh, so amazing. He could play every instrument. So I've read his biographies. And
Was he trained?
Not like, classically. I mean, it was, his father was a musician.
Okay, gotcha.
So that kind of just, they always had these instruments around, and then he taught himself. He was self-taught on, like, he literally could pick up any instrument and play it.
Yeah, so amazing. I self-taught myself to play the piano, but that did not end up me being the world's best shredding guitarist. I think I have some natural talent for it, but it ends at, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb. So
I'm self-taught in cowbell.
Cowbell.
Yes.
More cowbell is what we need. Welcome to the show. TCBpodcast.com is where you could go to find out more information about the show, listen to the episodes, drop us a comment, ask us a question. If we like it, we'll answer it on the show. If we don't, we'll block you from the website. leave a review. Sharing is caring. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, everywhere else you can find your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the show. I've got my good friend, Chrissy Hoadley, good friend and co-host, Chrissy Hoadley, here with me.
Hello.
Hello,
Brian Green.
And today we wanted to rap about our craziest or funnest or whatever concert stories, because we're all huge lovers of music here. And I wanted to bring in Hoadley's husband, who I refer to kindly as Jeff Hoadley. So welcome, Jeff Hoadley.
Hello.
And Jeff Hoadley is no mere watcher of the music industry. He is one of the cogs in the wheel, a very important man in the music business. Spent 10 years doing live concert promotion, is now an executive producer, and is highly involved in the beautiful and wonderful brand new music festival in Memphis called Memfo. You're on year number, or you were going to be on year number three. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Year number three, but that's canceled this year.
No, there's been three. This was going to be year four.
Oh, sorry. Year number four. That's right. There's been three. We're going to do year fourth, but now you've pushed it back to 2021. So Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
So tell me, what you obviously understand more than most people the effect that COVID-19 has had on the music business, because your festival is in October, right?
That's right.
And you just went ahead and canceled it, I don't know, a month and a half ago. You guys, like, right off the bat were like, not going to happen. Even if it does happen, it's going to be too crowded, right? The space will be too crowded. Too many live events happening in that month. We feel like we're just, you know, pissing in the wind, so to speak, throwing a music festival together when every other music festival in the world is going to try and cram it into October. But now it looks unlikely that any music festival is going to happen in October anyway. So tell me about the decision-making process that went behind that, and what kind of nightmare is it to move a festival like that?
Yeah, it's a big nightmare. We saw early on that we didn't think that there was a possibility that there was a possibility that there could be an outbreak again in the fall. And there's obviously a lot that goes into putting on a festival, from the operations standpoint to, you know, securing artists, and obviously the fans, you know, and the sure. health of our patrons are is the number one priority and safety. So we saw early on that there could be, you know, potentials for a lot of issues. And then we saw every festival pushing to September, October. And as big as the festival world is, there is actually limited resources in terms of
staging
and personnel, and having the right people, and, you know, the right artist relations person, or the right stage managers, and the right, you know, personnel and staging and lighting and everything else. So once we saw major festivals like Bonnaroo and Coachella and all these others moving to the fall, that was yet another set of challenges. So the decision, once we kind of all got together, the decision was pretty easy for us to pull the trigger and move it to next year. So it's painful to do it, but I think it was the right move.
So you guys make a decision basically that says, like, it's just a very easy decision. We may not have the people, we may fall low on the priority list as far as labor and staging and all this stuff are concerned. We don't want to fight for resources. It probably gets more expensive that way. Tell me about the artists. Are they on board with this? Do you communicate with them ahead of time? Obviously, the artists are already booked, or at least they have letters of intent, right? They're booked. What are the conversations like? Are they all on board? They're saying, yeah, we agree with you. This ain't going to happen this year.
Yeah, we were early on in the process of booking artists this year, so we didn't have a full schedule locked in at this point, but at that point. Yeah, and, you know, the thing about it is you could have bought a pandemic insurance policy prior to all this, you know, relatively cheaply. Now, no one can afford one now. One of the few examples of somebody that did was Wimbledon, the tennis tournament. They've been buying pandemic insurance for, I think, the last 15 years, roughly.
No shit.
And they just cashed in several billion-dollar they just cashed in because of the cancellation of Wimbledon. So
several billion dollars.
Yep.
That's insanity. Good for them.
Yep.
Smart move, chickens. I mean, yep. Obviously you buy rain insurance, you buy flood insurance, you buy fire insurance, you buy whatever insurance. When you're putting on a festival that's costing you millions of dollars, no stone goes unturned, but a pandemic hasn't happened in 100 years. And I guess we all kind of assumed that if a pandemic did happen, it'd be handled a lot better than this, right? So, yeah, I mean, you'd think that it's just something that doesn't cross your mind. It's like, I don't know, terrorism insurance before 9/11. You don't buy it. It's not, who cares, right? It's not even worth the cost. So 2021, How do you feel about 2021? Because I've heard, and I don't have as well placed sources as you do, obviously, but I have my fingers here and there, right? I've heard that Live Nation is preserving cash to fall of 2021. They think that they may not have another concert filling a stadium or a venue like they did previous to the pandemic until fall of 2021 or maybe even spring of 2022.
That's what I'm, you know, we'll see what happens. It's a race with science right now, but I think that most of the big artists that I've had some limited contact with over the last couple of months, everybody is kind of eyeing next summer as a starting point. So we'll see what happens. So it's science, and when people feel safe to go out, it'll be a hell of a party when we all do go out.
God bless, man. I can't wait till we can get back to concerts. I had a lot of concert tickets this summer. I had Fish. I had a couple Pearl Jam shows. I had some concerts that I was really looking forward to go to. The Pearl Jam shows have already come and gone, and I got my money back for one of them. But the other one that was in Nashville, I just kind of hanging on because I have really good seats. So I'm just like, I'm hanging on and hoping that they reschedule. But they haven't given any information out. And my understanding is Live Nation, Pearl Jam asked that Live Nation refund those dollars, right? So they agreed to that. But my understanding is Live Nation is not canceling a lot of concerts until they absolutely have to, because they don't want to refund the money. They're trying to preserve the cash, right? Make interest on interest and all that other good stuff. They want it. They're shoring up their financials, even if it's in a short period of time. So Fish is out.
There's a lot of controversy out there in the ticketing industry right now in terms of how this is being handled. And a lot of this is going to see courtrooms. And you know, the definition of postponed versus canceled, mm-hmm. and refund policies. You know, there's so many ticketing platforms right now, and some are handling it well, and others are not. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
We had tickets to the Doobie Brothers.
I love the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, we freaking, and with Michael McDonald.
With Michael McDonald?
Yes. I've seen That's why we got the tickets.
Sounds like he's singing with a dick in his throat. I love him. But he's got a great voice.
Still
he's just
sounds
like,
the same. He still can, sounds the same.
And you cannot miss Michael McDonald's voice from a million miles away.
No,
I can't wait to go back to concerts, because some of my best memories, I think all of us, right? It's like music and booze and fun and sex or whatever it is. It's all kind of intertwined. And I wonder how these big festivals are going to fare, like Bonnaroo and stuff. Like, we went to Bonnaroo. Jeff, you, a couple years ago, this is a funny story, I think. A couple years ago. Actually, not even a couple years ago, many years ago.
8 years ago.
8 years ago? Is that how long ago this was?
Eight years ago.
Holy shit, I'm getting old. I felt like I was old back then because I'd like bailed out. So 8 years ago, Chrissy and Jeff had just started dating. And I'll never forget when you guys started dating. I think I was there maybe one of the first days that you guys knew each other.
You were.
Chrissy and Jeff lived in an apartment complex here in Atlanta, and they lived a door down from each other. So it was like one end of the hallway and another end of the hallway in this huge apartment complex in Midtown Atlanta. And I was hanging out with Chrissy, as we often did back then, and just on a Saturday afternoon or whatever it was.
We were having margaritas.
That's right. We were having margaritas. I think we were down at the pool, or we were just dicking around Atlanta.
Yeah.
So we get back to her house, and she says, you know, I met this guy. Like, he helped me with my groceries. Is that the story? He helped you with the groceries?
I helped him with his groceries.
It's 2020. Get your shit straight, Ryan.
That's right.
Chivalry is not dead. Yeah. So Chrissy helps him with his groceries, and then she says to us, me and another girl that were with us, she says, hey, I met this guy this afternoon, and he's my neighbor, and I, you know, think he's kind of cute. And we're like, oh, cool, you know. So Jeff knocks on the door, or calls, or whatever it is, later on in the evening, called, and he says, hey, why don't you guys come over and have a drink? I'm home, and, you know, come on over. Chrissy says, I got my friend here, and yeah, come on by. And so Jeff and I and Chrissy it's the three of us in Jeff's apartment. Jeff and I hit it off. We're talking about music and shooting the shit, and I'm fascinated by his live promotion stuff. And I'm like, instantaneously.
Me too.
Yeah, instantaneously, I'm like, if you ever need any help, let me know. I want to go to live shows for free. Let me know. I know what I'm talking about, I swear. And so Jeff's like patting me like a little dog. Yeah, sure, I'll call you. But then at some point during the evening, Chrissy is just like, gives me the mistakable sign that it's time for me to get the fuck out of the house.
You mean, by that I said you need to get the fuck out.
Yeah, you said you need to leave.
You need to leave.
He said, don't you need to be somewhere? I like kind of, sometimes I would spend the night at Christy's house if I would get too drunk, and I was kind of like, oh, I thought we were going to crash. She's like, nah, I'm gonna hang here. You should go home. Go home. It's only 3 o'clock in the morning.
I was like, damn, that was a forced Irish exit there. I was shocked. I was like, is that okay to tell your friends to leave like that?
Like, yeah, I've known him for years. It's cool.
Jeff, you must have known the green light was, it was a green light go, because yeah, she literally patted me on the butt on the way out. She was like, don't let the door hit you in the ass. So then a couple months later, or maybe even not even a month later, I don't know, she calls me up and she says, I'm going to go to Bonnaroo with Jeff. He is producing a television show live from Bonnaroo, or, you know,
he was working for Billboard.
Yeah, he's working for Billboard TV. And he says, I'm producing this show live for Billboard at Bonnaroo. I've got a couple tickets. I've asked Jeff if he can get you an extra pass. And I was like, oh, my God, that's fucking insane. She says this on a Wednesday. We have to leave, and, you know, the next day. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in. So we pack up. We jump in Chrissy's car and we drive all the way up and grab a couple of backstage passes at some cheap motel on the side of the road, and we head to the show, and lo and behold, it's a green light go pass. Like, we're backstage, we're in the VIP area, all the artists are walking around, Jeff's kind of working, and then he'd come back and have a beer with us, and then he'd go back and work. And Chrissy and I are just sitting back there like, oh, there's Tom York from Radiohead. How fucking cool is that? And
Ludacris
was sitting right, yeah, in front of us. So Jeff was doing an interview with him, or was producing an interview with him. And so the day is going on. It's hot as fucking shit. And
oh, my God.
We're back there. There's a bunch of tents, but, you know, some of them are cordoned off because they're private areas for artists and stuff like that. So Chrissy and I have no idea where we're supposed to be or what we're supposed to do. But there's free beer all over the place. But there's a couple of backstage areas, and one of them you have to kind of like walk through the crowd and walk through this crowded place and then get over there. And then everyone's, you know, it's not like the VIP area. It's like where people pay to be VIP. So it's free booze, but you're with the common people, right? And Chrissy and I now have these passes, and we're not with the common people. So I'm like, I'm going to go hunt down some fucking beer, right? I need to get a couple of extra beers. And I pick the first, and I say, Chrissy, what do I say? Like, if someone stopped me, tell him you're with Jeff from Moon Taxi.
Hey, so I didn't feel that comfortable leaving the pass at the front desk there. So what I did is I put it in an envelope in the very front pouch of my briefcase, which is over by the closet in the room. So envelope in front pouch of briefcase with your name on it. And nobody's going to ask, but if anybody did ask, you're a guest of Moon Taxi and Don Van Cleef, but nobody can ask, but just thought I'd be super prepared. So anyway, so that's it. Call me back. Okay, bye.
And I'm like, Jeff with Moon Taxi? What the fuck does that mean? Okay, I'll tell him what I'm with Moon Taxi. I walk into the first tent I see, and there's a guy standing there. And he says, oh, hey, man. And I'm like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm with Moon Taxi. And he's like, you're with Moon Taxi? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in Moon Taxi. I got Moon Taxi, whatever I say, right? I'm the Moon Taxi. I took the Moon Taxi. I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Weren't they Moon Taxi?
Well, here's the story. So I walk in, and I go straight to the cooler, and I grab a couple beers, and there's another guy. He's like standing behind the cooler, and he's like, oh, hey, man, that's I think that's, you know, that's for Moon Taxi. And I'm like, yeah, we're with Moon Taxi. I'm Moon Taxi. I'm the main guy in Moon Taxi. I don't even know what the fuck Moon Taxi is, but here I am. This beer is for me. It says Moon Taxi. So I think I'm entitled to the beer. And the guy's like, really? You're with Moon Taxi? And I'm like, yeah, Jeff from Moon Taxi? And he's like, I don't think there's a Jeff in Moon. So I'm like, I don't know. It's Moon Taxi. I'm in Moon Taxi. So I take the beers, and on the way out the door, there's another guy, right? And he says, hey, I think that beer's for Moon Taxi. And I'm like, yeah, I'm with Moon Taxi. And he says, no, I'm with Moon Taxi. I am Moon Taxi. You're not with Moon Taxi. And I'm like, I was told that I'm with Moon Taxi.
Moon Taxi is a band, by the way. It's
and I had no fucking clue, right? I thought it was the name of a company, or we were like the VIP area and it was named. And so the guy finally relented, and he said, or he just finally, I think he just realized that I was way in over my head in this bullshit that I was spewing. And he just said, okay, man, you know, take those beers, but I think you got to go get them from somewhere else next time. And I was like, I come back to Chrissy, and I'm like, Chrissy, I said Moon Taxi. And they said, you're not with Moon Taxi. We don't even know who you are. And Chrissy's like, Moon Taxi. Taxi's a band. It's a band. And I'm like, oh, it's a band, not a company. I look like a fucking shithead. I'm just taking everybody's beers. But I have never, honestly, I have never been had so much access to such a huge festival. And that was an incredible day. From your side of it, Jeff, like, tell me about, I know you're producing the billboard, but Radiohead played that year. Tell us, like, what your angle is on that. You must be fucking... Is that cool to you, or is it just something you're so used to? It's like, well, whatever. When you're backstage like that, hanging out.
No, it's fun. It depends on it depends on the job. But that particular weekend, we were just doing packages for interviews for you know, kind of live from Bonnaroo and kind of updates from Man on the Street type of stuff. So, but yeah, no, I have a blast doing like that type of thing.
I've done that at the Grammys.
I've done that type of work for many years. So whether at tons of different festivals, it could be grueling, and you could have overnight editors and be, you know, dropping shit off at midnight, picking stuff up at 6 a.m. But in the timelines can be funky. But no, I have a blast doing it. I'm a music lover, and I love talking to musicians. And I remember interviewing Kenny Rogers that weekend too.
Oh, you interviewed Kenny Rogers that night?
I think it was that year. I can't remember. They all kind of run together, but yeah, no, I enjoy doing that. It's fun. So, and most artists are pleasant to work with, and yeah, I dig it.
So we get through the afternoon. Chrissy and I are just kind of bopping around while Jeff's doing his thing. We're going back and forth and back and forth. Jeff's getting off. At some point, Jeff's going to get off. And I know that I'm going to get patted on the butt, right? Because Chrissy's not here to see Brian. She can see Brian any day of the week. She's here to see Jeff. So I decide that at some point the sun goes down and Radiohead is starting to play.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I got to go make my friends out here somewhere. And I think I may have had some friends at the show or something, and I'm trying to find them. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, I end up in the other VIP area, and I meet a young lady and a couple of her friends. And so we're all talking, and we're sharing beers, and I'm getting a little frothy at this point. Like, we've been in the sun all day long. You know, I could take down a 13-pack of Bud Light in about 6 hours. So I was, and still stand straight up, I was pretty shit-faced. And I don't really remember what happens, but something starts to happen. And I realize at some point, I've been given something. I ate something. I took something. Something happened. I don't really remember. I don't. I just don't. I can't tell you what happened. But that unmistakable turn in your mind where you're like, oh, shit, what did I take? Or what
Hello,
happened?
Hello, funny feeling.
Hello, spinny wheels. So I start walking up and back and forth in the crowd in Radiohead. And at the time, I was dating a girl. Don't need to mention her name, but we had a rather tumultuous relationship. And I was walking back and forth trying to get a hold of this girl that I was dating, right? And she wasn't answering the phone. And sometimes I had service and sometimes I didn't. And I just remember walking back and forth in the crowd, smoking cigarettes, like all the way to the fence and then all the way to the front and then all the way to the fence and then all the way to the front. At the time, I had a friend who lived in the town where Bonnaroo is produced. Like, what's the name of the town?
Manchester.
She lived in Manchester. And I called her on the way up because I knew we only had one hotel room and I certainly wasn't going to be welcome there, right? Because it's the Jeff and Hody show. So I called her on the way up and I said, hey, can I please stay at your house? She says, I get out of town on this weekend because I don't want to have anything to fucking do with it, but I'm leaving you a key under the mat. Do you know where my house is? And I say, yeah, I know where your house is because I've been there before.
I gave him my car.
All you had to say was you were with Moon Taxi.
That's all I had to say. I'm just... Because the Ritz-Carlton in Manchester, Tennessee was gonna invite me right in with Moon Taxi.
They only have Motel 6 and like
the Holiday Inn and
motels ever.
That'll change over years.
Yeah, probably.
So I have Hoadley's car keys and I text Hoadley and I say, I'm going to go find Anna's house. This
I'm
is
like,
the good
take
name of the girl.
My car.
Yeah, take your car. Go.
I'll ride back with Jeff. That's what
I don't
said.
Give a shit. I just don't want you around. Yeah.
You go, I'll ride back with Jeff.
So I, at some point, decide that I am going to go find Chrissy Hoadley's car, which I have no fucking clue where it is. And I am so spun out. I have no idea. I literally walked a mile and a half out that gate to find Chrissy's car. And when I got to Chrissy's car, I realized that I probably shouldn't be driving, but it's just a little short drive over to this house in Manchester. So I'm going to take the chance. I drove in the middle of the night. Now it's probably about midnight. I drive in the middle of the night and I try and find this girl's house. I have no fucking clue where her house is. I think I see the street. I think this is the house. I think that is the house. I finally get to what I believe is the house. I pull up and I get out of the car. And as soon as I get out of the car, there's a gentleman in the glass, like in the window. And I'm like, oh no, that's not Anna's house. And I get back in the car and I go and I drive around and I think I see another house, but it's got two cars in the driveway. I can't find her house. I have no clue. In the dark, they all look the same. And I'm like, texting her, trying to ask. She doesn't respond. So I'm like, okay, fine. You know what? I'm just going to go find a hotel room somewhere. I'm going to get out. I'm going to find a hotel room. Manchester to the next town, to the next town, to the next town, to Chattanooga. To Dalton.
Like, I'm just going home.
Yeah, to just all the way back to Atlanta. I spent 6 hours in the car driving around, shit hammered. I mean, I should never have been driving. I don't know what made me believe that was the right thing to do. But I drove so fucking far just to get back to Atlanta. And by the time I woke up, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Christy's calling me. She's like, where'd you go? Okay. And I'm like, well, I'm back in Atlanta. And she's like, are you going to come back? And I'm like, if it's all right with you, why don't you just come back and then I'll give you your car when you get here.
Mark of a good friend.
It's a mark of a great friend. And I think I had your car for like 10 days after that because you were just like, I'm with Jeff. Don't worry about it. Give me your car back whenever. I'll get my car next Tuesday. What is the craziest concert story you have? Because I think that's one of the craziest that I probably have. I probably have a few others that might match that. But driving home in the middle of the night after seeing Radiohead at Bonnaroo is pretty, on a 7.5 hour drive is pretty good.
So you Jeff, need a lifeline.
Call a lifeline. You've been doing this for 2 decades now, right? And you've produced major concert festivals. You've been backstage. I know there's got to be a story way crazier than driving home at 3 o'clock in the morning from Bonnaroo. So hit me with it. I want to hear your craziest story because that's what you do.
Well, there's been so many. There's the most infamous story that I have involves Two Live Crew, the rap band Two Live Crew.
Me so horny.
Great band. Great man. Great cultural.
Are they a band?
Yeah, they're a group. A thing. They're a thing.
So I was promoting a Two Live Crew. This is when I lived over in Oxford, Mississippi. And I was promoting a show, I believe it was end of 96. Wow. And so the show sold out. And it was, there was 1,000 kids there. I say kids. It was mostly fraternity and sorority kids. And so my partner and I got to the show a few minutes late. And we're in the back, and it's packed, and we're selling tons of booze, and things seem fine. And then all of a sudden, they had these dancers that were on stage, and the dancers go off the stage, and they come back out, and they don't have any tops on. And we're like, oh, these girls have no tops on. And
fully nude. I mean, fully nude from the waist up.
From the waist up. And so my partner and I look at each other and said, oh, this could be a problem. You're in a Bible Belt.
Oxford, Mississippi,
deep south, place. And so we let it go for a minute and
let it ride
for a minute. Then the girls go off stage and they come back for the next song and they're fully 100% nude.
Whoa.
So at this point, then,
like Ching Chang's hanging out and everything.
Everything. And it's the Me So Horny Dancer. So it's three women.
Oh my God.
Completely nude on stage in front of 1,000 people. And so my partner and I look at each other. And so he's like, I'll take care of the stage. You take care of the soundboard. So the idea was I'd go over the soundboard. I'd cut the sound. He'd go to the stage, deal with the performers, and I'd cut the lights on too.
Oh, but there's more.
So that took it very well documented. That took about 11 minutes to accomplish that, to run through all the audience and get everything done. What happened in that 11 minutes is pretty famous. There was all sorts of stuff that I guess we're on a podcast, so we can say whatever the hell we want to say.
Sure.
But there was
all 11 listeners are just interested in what you have to say.
there was many lewd and obscene gestures that, and not just gestures, acts that occurred in that 11 minutes. There was
Luke and the girls, or just the girls doing whatever they're doing?
The girls were doing, they put lollipops in their vaginas and then were throwing them out into the audience. There was strap on.
That's my favorite kind of lollipop, a lollipop pussy.
There was
a labia lollipop. I love it.
They had brought audiences of the members of the audience up on stage and were performing lewd acts on stage.
Were they giving blowjobs on stage?
They gave one kid a kind of
semi hand job,
semi one with whipped cream and stuff.
Way.
And it was a lot of stuff went on during these 11 minutes, and so we shut down the show, and the lights went on, and by the time that the police arrived, the band was across the county line at that point.
They jumped off a bus and got out.
They knew.
Anybody that's worked with hip hop or rap artists know that, you know, most demand to get paid before they even go on stage. So they had been paid, and they were across the county line by the time that the police arrived. The show was over at that point. I mean, I thought the show was over, but that was really just...
Yeah, show was over. I did what I needed to do. I cut them off, and what else can you ask for?
That was just the beginning.
And that just turned into the beginning of the story. So, anyway, the police at Oxford...
Okay, wait, let's stop for just one second, because I want to inform... We have a lot of younger listeners of the show who may not even have been born in 1996, but Two Live Crew is a pretty famous rap group that gained coming out of Miami, Florida, that gained notoriety by putting together some of the dirtiest rap that you ever heard. When I say dirtiest, I mean dirty, like penthouse letters in rap form, right?
Correct.
And some of their songs were edited to broadcast on air, and they kind of became like a circus. Like everywhere this guy, Luke, who headed up the group, went...
Skywalker.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker was his onstage name. And wherever he went, trouble came. Police wanted to arrest him. 1996 is not like 2020. And even in 2020, you can't have girls on stage sticking lollipops up their chucha. You know, that stuff's just not allowed. And so he made a show of it everywhere that he went. They became extremely popular for like half a second because they were the act that no one could handle. Essentially, it was just too much. They were doing the crudest, rudest, crazy stuff out there. And so it kind of and then the freedom fighters get involved, right? This is too crude. We don't want it. And then the other guys are saying, hey, free speech. And Tipper Gore.
And they made it all the way to their case made it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, they did. And
what was the thing that they had on the
parental warnings?
Parental warnings is probably in part due to Two Live Crew, or maybe in whole, right? That's kind of what tipped the edge. So when you see a parental warning on a CD cover, if you even know what a CD is, that's why. And now these parental warnings that come along with TV and movie and shows and all this other stuff, really, it started back in 1996. And so, Jeff, let me ask you just a couple questions about the show before you get into the jail part of this. Do you contact their management directly, or you contact, did they even have management at that time, or are you just contacting them to book the show?
No, I believe we went through their agent. They had an agency.
So they're taking a tour, and you say, hey, why don't you stop here, and we'll pay you X amount of dollars. You remember how much you paid them? A couple thousand, 10,000, 15?
A couple grand, I think.
A couple grand. Okay. And so at this point, are they at the beginning or the end of this craziness that's happening? Are they at the beginning of the 15 minutes of fame or at the end?
I think they're towards the end, but... they were still riding it, though. They were still riding it.
They were still riding it. Are they? Did you meet them? Are they? Is it just like? Are they too much?
I met all those guys. Yeah.
Because he seemed rather nice once you got him calmed down. This guy, Luke Skywalker, like at least in interviews I've seen. I mean, he was pushing the envelope, but he seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah, what were they like?
They were all packing heat. I remember that.
They were all carrying guns.
They were all carrying guns. I do.
Into the Ox. Well, I mean, you're in Oxford, Mississippi, as a black man, maybe.
But that was the first for me. I'd promoted 1,000 shows prior to that one, and never seen
an artist with a gun.
Never seen an artist with a gun. No.
Okay, so little rant is over. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood who Two Live Crew was. You should go back and do a little homework on Wikipedia about Two Live Crew. So now the police show up. So there's 11 minutes between the girls getting up on stage fully nude and starting to perform extraordinarily lewd acts. I mean, a strip club wouldn't allow this, right?
Correct.
So, and even at some bachelor, this is the kind of stuff you would see at a bachelor party with some really ragtag strippers.
Yes.
And so, which is probably what they were, right? And I imagine they're he just kind of pays them good money to go up and make a scene so that he can get some press, is probably how this happens. So you go, you pull the plug, you turn the lights on, show's over, see you later. They get out the back door and they don't look back. They just head out because they've already been paid. How many minutes into the show are you? Like 15 minutes?
No, this is probably maybe 6-7 songs into it.
Okay, so you're 6 or 7 songs. So you kind of got your money's worth, right? People paid
The Be So Horny dancers didn't come out till about the third song or so.
Okay. So show's over. How long does it take for the cops to get there?
It's a small town, so it was
10 or 15 minutes.
Less than 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay, so cops show up. What happens next? Go on.
So lights are on. Everybody's just stunned. Everybody's walking around just going, what just happened? Did you see that? I can't believe I just witnessed that. And the police are trying to figure out what happened. And we just figured my business.
The police are doing an investigation into the labia polypops.
We just figured it was over at that point. And when in fact it was just beginning. So the police had gotten wind that there was that somebody had videotaped it somehow or another. That they got word around that, oh, so and so had made a video copy of this. So there became this great mystery of who has this video. And ultimately, we were able to track down the guy that had the video. And we thought we got the tape before the police did. So we had a ceremony. We viewed the tape. We're astonished. We couldn't even, because I was busy trying to shut down the
cord. Sure, you're running around trying to cut
and
the cord.
When I finally saw this tape, I was like, oh my God. I couldn't believe what I witnessed or didn't witness in live. And so at that point, we had a ceremonial burning of this tape. We buried it in a backyard and burned it, and that was it. We said, that's it, we'll never view this thing again. Well, it turns out that this kid had made a copy.
Of course he did. He this is his money trail. He's going to sell it to every fraternity
there's
in America.
Always a copy. So the police show up with a warrant and get this tape from this kid.
Oh my
so God. That began a series of they pressed charges against my partner and I for allowing lewd and
lascivious acts. And
wasn't there behavior. Somebody that was involved in the audience that was a high up political person or
his daughter was on stage and she was involved in a sexual act and there was political ramifications to this.
No shit. So wait, the daughter of a local politician was up on stage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, like showing her tits or what was going on? Something like that?
She enjoyed the Miso Horny Dancers.
Oh my God. So they decide they're going to press charges. And of course, I would imagine that at that time, producing a videotape with that kind of footage also comes along with its own consequences, right? So now not only are you allowing the acts, but then they're being videotaped.
Right.
Holy shit.
So they end up
videotaped. Just one little side note here, because there weren't iPhones back then. Was there somebody with like a camcorder?
It was a camcorder.
It was a camcorder. Yeah. A little handheld.
Well, I got to imagine you're going to see Two Live Crew. It's a total fucking circus. If you have a camcorder, you're probably bringing it, right?
Who? Our younger audience has no idea camcorder. What a camcorder was.
C-A-M-C-O-R-D-E-R, camcorder. So this takes a little bit of time, but the police eventually say, we're going to press charges against you guys. You guys allowed this to happen.
Right.
You encouraged it to happen.
So that kind of sets off a wave of and look, the internet wasn't what the internet is today, but it started off a wave of press, and there was press, beginning to percolate out certainly on a local level, and then it became a national story, and so they set a court date for us, and we've got a team of attorneys as well as the. We've got a bunch of folks that are representing us who feel.
Do they represent you pro bono? Do they say we're jumping in here because we want to be a part of it?
They did.
Yeah.
And we had civil liberties folks that were doing pro bono work for us too, as well as our normal attorney as well. And so we strike a deal with the prosecuting attorney. And as you know, when the defense strikes a deal with the prosecutor, 99.9% of the time, the judge is going to go with what that deal is going to, you know, it, well, most of the time it'll, the punishment will look like what something like what the deal that they struck.
The prosecutor is representing the people, right? Yeah. And so the judge is elected by the people. So he says, or she says, hey, listen, if the people agree that this is a punishment suiting the crime, then who am I to step in and say otherwise? But the judge has the ultimate say. If you put together a plea deal, it doesn't always mean that it's going to go down like that. So I'm imagining what happens next.
So we get to court, and the Honorable Glenn Alderson.
Glenn Alderson.
He was a good
Oxford,
old boy.
Mississippi.
Honorable Glenn. Well, he heard vaginal insertion, and then he took a break to go look at the tape. And he walks back into the room, and he said, boys, you brought the snake in, so you're responsible for the snake. And slammed his gavel down and said, 6 months in prison. Bam.
6 months in prison?
And sentenced me and my partner to 6 months in jail. So,
Jeff, this is insane. This is an insane story. 6 months in prison for promoting a concert?
Yes. So the next thing I know, I've got cuffs on, I'm shackled, I'm going into, and I've got like channel 5 and channel 11 in my face now, and I'm going into the back of the cop car. They're wheeling me off to the maximum security prison they have in Oxford. And I'm like, what? And then next thing I know, I'm in pod C of maximum security in an orange jumpsuit. And my partner and I are looking at it going, what the hell is going on? So we're sitting in jail, and our attorney at some point a few hours later comes in and says, look, I can get you guys. We can post bail right now and get you guys out.
Get you guys leave town. get you out of the country.
But the issue is you might have to go to the next state court as opposed to the local court. And I don't know how they're going to view this. So his recommendation to us was stay put for right now. And let's just see if we can sway popular opinion and the judge to just let you guys out in a day or two. So we stayed in prison for 10 days.
No and fucking shit.
And it was getting to the point where like I was just like, let's just post bail and get
out. Are you in the state prison or are you in the city holding cell? Like in the city jail?
It's a maximum security facility that they have there for that handles, I think, people mostly in northern Mississippi. I could be
okay, gotcha.
About that. But wow. but it's not your like little podunk type of, you know, county jail type of thing. I mean, it's a large facility. I learned a lot in those 10 days.
I learned how to make a shank. I learned how to trade my potatoes for cigarettes.
Speaking of cigarettes, I could learned how to light one by you took toilet paper and rolled it up and you would put it into the electrical outlet and jostle it until it caught on fire. And then that's the way you could light your smoke off of that.
Oh man. I've been there. I spent a couple of days in, but it was like the city jail, right? And it was for something having nothing to do with like lewd and facetious acts. And the judge didn't throw 6 months at me. 6 months is a long time in prison.
Yep. So
are you nervous? Are you fucking shitting yourself that you're going to spend the next 6 months in jail?
No, because we knew that we could have gotten out and we could have posted bail at any point, but we just knew that what was going to happen next was the big issue. Was that if we went to the state court down in Jackson, Mississippi, would they view this the same? And then would we actually have to serve the entire 6 months? So we were rolling the dice at that point.
Howard Stern is checking in on this, by the way.
So this becomes a national story at this point, and Howard Stern picks it up, and the rock radio station in Memphis was, you know, the morning show there was kind of checking in on us every day. Meanwhile, the entire city of Oxford there was people wearing black black ribbons, and they were putting up they were putting up.
Jeff is dead. Jeff died.
There were letters to the editor. Apparently the judge got flooded by letters. It was a huge, you know, it became a thing.
No, and so on
the morning after the 10th day, 10th night, he let us go with time served. And so that ultimately became my most memorable concert story.
I would say you got me beat by a fucking mile. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Just to bring it all back to Bonnaroo, the year that we were talking about, Jeff revealed this story to me that year at Bonnaroo. I was like, what?
That's not second date material. That's stuff you break out a couple months later. Yeah.
Oh my God.
You got caught up.
Like, I just had to tell you I've been to jail before, and I was like, for what? And then he told me this story.
Oh my God. You got caught up in like the the wrong place at the wrong time in the evolution of this particular story in the history of music in the United States, which is Two Live Crew was absolutely fucking insane, and they were running around doing all this crazy stuff, and there was this fight between civil libertarians who said, hey, that's freedom of speech, that's what it is, and all of these, you know, right-wing freedom fighters who were saying that, you know, Two Live Crew is the downfall of American society. So you get caught in it, and then, yeah, obviously, you know, you paid some consequences because of their bad behavior. Did Two Live Crew ever come back and say anything to you guys? Like, did their management call? Did anybody from the representation call and say? And did the police ever go after Two Live Crew? Why were they? No. Or did they say, nah, they're beyond the state lines, we're not getting them?
Exactly. Yep. Nope. Our attorneys, we tried to reach out to them. We tried to get comments and it just a more validation that we did not know what was about to happen. That's all
you had nothing.
That's what we were looking for them to say. Say, hey, these guys didn't know that this was about to happen. So, but no, we never got anything from them. Interestingly enough, on the back end of the story, I actually was back at that jail again about a year later, but I wasn't a prisoner.
You were taking a tour of the facilities?
No, I was promoting another show in the town, and one night Woody Harrelson walks into my venue, and long story short, Woody ends up getting on stage, does a Beatles number with this band that was on stage, and then Woody and I ended up striking up a friendship. He was shooting a film in Oxford, and we became friends, and he came out to my house. We ended up spending about a week together after that, and he was shooting The People versus Larry Flynt, which, as you know, Larry Flynt, founder of Hustler,
movie,
and he had gone on multiple occasions, had faced courts that were talking about his lewd and obscene behavior through his magazine. And so they were filming the court scenes and the jail scenes for The People versus Larry Flynt in Oxford. So I went back as a guest of Woody Harrelson's in the same jail, you know. I had my hand on the glass and with the telephone, the whole thing. So,
know what? We could spend an entire another show probably on your week with Woody Harrelson. I gotta imagine. Do you still stay in? Just real quick, do you still stay in touch with him?
I have a good friend that does stay in touch with him. But no, I haven't. I did see him after that week a couple times. But
there's a whole other story about Woody.
Okay, this is what I want to do. We're coming up on an hour for this particular podcast, but what I would like to do is, Jeff, if we can invite you on again for another episode, I'd like to do that. Chrissy, I want to get to your favorite, your craziest concert story. And Jeff, if you would join us for another episode, I think we've just scratched the surface of good stories between you and Hoadley. So I'll invite you on again. TCBpodcast.com is where you... I can't even say this correctly. TCBpodcast.com is where you go to find out more information about the show. Leave us a comment or a message or a question, and we will address it on the show if we like it. At The Commercial Break is your Instagram account. You can find us on Facebook. Join the group. And thanks for listening.
Email us at thecommercialbeat@gmail.com. Find us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Commercial Break. New episodes drop every Wednesday. We can be found on Spotify, iHeartMedia, Apple, Google, and all major podcast providers. The Commercial Break is a Great Middleweight production. Written and produced by Brian Green. Co-hosted by Chrissy Hogan.